You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Fast Break Edition podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We are back today with our Fast Break Edition podcast. The usual schedule is thrown out the window with trade deadline madness upon us. Of course, we're going to be talking about a couple of trades that have gone down within the last 12 hours, one of those happening just an hour or so after I recorded yesterday's podcast. So, Michael Bolton, what should we do?
Let's get to it.
All right, that is a fantastic idea. That trade, of course, that I am referencing is the big news of Tobias Harris being shipped from the LA Clippers to the Philadelphia 76ers. As I said yesterday, I just finished the podcast, posted it up, getting ready to go out, was going out, jumped in my car, and Woj bomb blew up my phone. So I did a quick little 2-3 minute periscope on my initial thoughts on that deal. I've gone back, I've adjusted all the projections on Basketball Monster, had time for this deal to sink in and to really work out what actually happened in this deal. So let's just break down the particulars of this trade. The LA Clippers send Tobias Harris, Boban Marjanovic, and Prison Mike Scott to the Philadelphia 76ers in exchange for Landry Shamet, Wilson Chandler, old baby neck, and the Moose, Mike Muscala. They also get a 2020 first-round pick, which is protected, the Miami Heat 2021 first-round pick, and 2 second-round picks as well. So that is a lot. 4 draft picks in a 3-for-3 player trade. Of course, Harris is an unrestricted free agent. You could also get Shamet's a first-round pick as well on the first year of his rookie-scale contract. That is a ton of value for the Clippers. They just obviously thought, we don't care about the 8 seed. We're going to be blowing it up. We're probably not going to be re-signing Tobias, and we get a really premium asset in that Heat unprotected first-round pick. We get a couple of other things. And as I said, first-round picks, you can say the Sixers are going to be good, and maybe they are. Maybe they don't retain either Butler or Harris, and that pick actually drops down in value. But the amount of players who are good that you can find at the end of that first round, just guys who are in who didn't make the All-Star team, but were in All-Star discussions, Rudy Gobert, Pascal Siakam, both picked in the 20s just a couple of seasons ago. You can talk about as much as you like Josh the Hitman Hart or the future MVP Kyle Kuzma. They're both picks in the late 20s. So many guys selected in that area of the draft. Nikola Jokic, who's going to be an All-NBA center, picked in the 40s in a draft. So you can still get value, and it's about having trust in what your front office does and your scout, and having extra bites at the apple, much like the Philadelphia 76ers did in the Sam Hinkie era. You can say, oh, Hinkie was shit because Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor were bad. And yeah, fine. You can have that opinion. You're wrong, but you can have that opinion. But it's about having multiple opportunities to get those players in, and that's what the Clippers have done. So this is a massive, massive deal for the Clippers. It is invariably going to make them worse, and I think this is the first domino that falls for the Clippers. Patrick Beverley, I think he is almost certainly not going to be a member of the Clippers when the trade deadline passes. Avery Bradley, potentially as well, although Doc Rivers does love him. Lou Williams, do they look to move him out? I think they can get some good assets back for Lou Williams. I think he is gone. The one that's a little bit tougher, I think, to move is probably the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari. He does have another year left on his contract, and it's a lot of salary to be trying to move off of to get rid of Gallinari. He's owed $21.5 million this season and $22 or $23 for next season. So that could be a little bit tough to get off of Gallinari's contract. But guys like Beverley's an unrestricted free agent as well. Marcin Gortat's an unrestricted free agent. Those guys could move. Miloš Teodosic, a restricted free agent. And as I said, I think Bradley, who has that team option for next season, I believe he could be easily gone. Beverley could be gone. Williams could be gone. The only guys who I think are safe on this Clippers team are Gildas Alexander and probably Harrell. And if the right move came up, they would look to move them. Now, this positions the Clippers for really big opportunity for max cap space in the offseason. The potential to push to 2 max slots as well. It really opens things up for guys maybe like Jimmy Butler, the fun guy Kawhi Leonard. So much can happen with this Clippers team, and I would be stunned if this is the last move that they make this trade deadline. So everything we're going to talk about the Clippers, we have to talk about it in the scheme of, you know, what else could they do. And let's talk about it now from this Clippers perspective. if we're looking at, and on the odd chance or the off chance that things stick as they are in LA, I think this is a significant boost to the rooster, Danilo Gallinari. He was putting up great numbers anyway, but what this should do is it put the ball in his hands a little bit more. It should up his usage rate, which means he's going to score more points. He gets to the line more, which is really one of his big strengths as a 90% type of free throw shooter. If he can get more free throw attempts there, that helps him. Maybe some more rebounds. Toby Harris was a pretty strong rebounder, and Gallinari had been playing some at center as well, but maybe this helps him in that regard. He's never going to be this huge accumulator of defensive numbers, but he gets a big boost up. And if anyone dropped him due to the injury, he is a clear add. I think this boosts Lou Williams' value. Of course, that could really tumble in the coming days or in the next 24 hours, actually, because we're recording this within 24 hours of the trade deadline. He could be gone. It does also open up value for Patrick Beverley, but the guy that I'm stashing on this Clippers team is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Not because this trade of Tobias Harris makes him a must-roster player. It makes him close. It makes him, I think, a top 150 sort of a guy. But if Beverley moves, if Williams moves, Doc will have no choice but to go all in on playing Shai 30 minutes a night and getting the ball into his hands more. The last two games, he has outplayed Avery Bradley, and Bradley's minutes have been on the decline. So Beverley is fine as an ad, and he's been fine as an ad for weeks now. But I think Shai is the guy, if you want to be looking at 24 hours in advance, for if one of those Williams, Bradley, Beverley guards move, it boosts Shai's value even more to maybe being a top 100 sort of a player. So he is the clear ad there to me. Now, the starting lineup is a confusing one. What are they going to do? Will they continue to run this small lineup of Beverley, Gilgeous-Alexander, and Bradley? Gallinari at the four, then the Gortat-Harrell pairing at the five. I've seen a few people mention, no, they'll just put Wilson Chandler in as a small four. I don't think Wilson Chandler is, well, he's definitely not a part of their future. He's definitely not a good small forward. He's not a good shooter. Really, he's not that. Look, maybe he moves in there at times, but he is really, at this point in his career, a power forward. Now, he could very easily move into that spot. Their wing depth is disgustingly bad at the moment. Yes, there's a bunch of guards, but on the wing, there's Luke Marmute, who might as well be dead, considering the lack of updates we've had there. There's Sindarius Thornwell, who's more of a two. The list manager, Ty Wallace, who's more of a 1/2. There is Jerome Robinson, more of a two, but all these guys have been getting some minutes at the three, either this season or last season, in particular for Ty Wallace. So there's a lot opening up there at that position where Tobias was playing. Yeah, do they look to put Mike Muscala in the starting lineup and put the Rooster back at small forward? I think that's a disaster. Gallinari really struggles guarding out threes. Now, the Clippers don't really care if they lose necessarily, and they would love to be able to protect their asset, which is that lottery-protected pick, which goes to the Celtics if they make the playoffs. And I think that's almost guaranteed to stay with them now as well. So it's another asset they gain out of this trade. Chandler, we've seen him play 30 minutes a night. He is not a standard league relevant player. Muscala can be that deeper league stream guy if you believe he's going to come in and play next to Gallinari. Now, I think Muscala is going to play, but I don't necessarily think he's going to play as much as what he was recently in Philadelphia. For as much as the Sixers are getting the best player in this deal, they were really thin before this deal. So guys like Chandler and like Muscala heading to the Clippers, it actually does hurt their value because Scott was barely playing. Marjanovic wasn't really in the rotation in LA. So you're adding guys, Shamet, Muscala, Chandler, who all had pretty big roles in Philadelphia, and they could actually all see their role shrink. Which, as weird as it sounds, the team losing the best player, those guys, that opportunity should come their way, but it doesn't, I don't think. Now, Shamet could have real interest if Williams or Bradley get moved, or Beverley. He's been an excellent three-point streamer all season, and I think he stays that way. Does he get minutes over Jerome Robinson? Well, he should. He's been better than Robinson this season, but also he's had a much larger opportunity, and it gets a little bit more crowded there for him. This is a Clippers team that gave up three forwards, two power forwards and a center, and they got back a guard. So he's got to try and figure out where he fits in there. So for him, it's not a big boost in numbers, but things could shake out in the next 24 hours that does really change that. So I think the big winner here is Gilgeous-Alexander. Obviously, Danilo Gallinari's value rises. Yeah, Beverley's a guy we look at, but that could be completely deflated in 24 hours' time. I think Gilgeous-Alexander is the stash player here on the Clippers that we need to be looking at. Deeper leagues, you look at Muscala and Chandler, but they're like 16 to 18 team leagues, I believe. Even if they were to start and play 30 minutes, they wouldn't be must-roster 12-team league guys. On the Philadelphia side of things, It's a massive hit, I believe, for Tobias Harris, who has been the 28th ranked player so far this season. I think from here on out, he will not be a top 50 guy. Why is that? His minutes will be fine. There's no worries about that. His efficiency, it probably will stick the same or it will rise. But he's already shooting 43% from three. So how much better can that shooting actually get? I think that's going to be tough for him to get better than that. He's already shooting 49.6% from the field, including 52% from three. How much better does that get? What is going to happen is his usage, which was only at 21%, he's not going to be able to stick at that level. Sharing the court with General Saunders, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid, he's just not going to get those touches. So one his biggest fantasy category, Tobias Harris, was free throw percentage. 88% on four attempts per game. I wouldn't be stunned if those free throws got cut in half. He's not a big free throw drawer anyway. As the number one guy on the Clippers team, he just wasn't getting to the line. And now he's going to be fourth in the offensive pecking order or having the ball in his hands. And if you don't have the ball in your hands, it's hard to get those free throw attempts. So not only will his field goal attempts drop pretty precipitously, I think his free throw attempt rate will drop precipitously, which takes away his best fantasy category. Will he hit more threes? Maybe. Yeah, probably. The rebounding, also an issue. He was a guy that put up big rebounding numbers in Orlando. That got really, really limited when he played alongside Andre Drummond in Detroit. Went to the Clippers, no real strong rebounder there. They bumped back up. He was averaging 7.8, and the highest number he's had in five seasons. And now he's got to share rebounds with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. They're going to come back down. His assists were at over 4 per game over the last month. This is a guy who'd never gotten to 2.5 per game before that. A factor or a result of him having the ball in his hands and being the number one player. That's no longer the case. Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, they're all three distributors who are higher than him in terms of the pecking order. So he is going to lose a shit ton of value here. Is he droppable? Absolutely not. But is he a guy that's going to maintain top 30 numbers? I would be absolutely staggered if he can maintain that level of production. And even over the last month, he had dropped down to the 36th ranked player, and the last 2 weeks, the 46th ranked player as he dealt with that shoulder issue. I think this is a massive, massive hit for Tobias Harris. Now, Joel Embiid, I think he's pretty insulated here. I don't think this really bothers him. I saw some people mention, oh, don't you think now that they've got Harris, they're going to rest Embiid more? No, I don't really think that's going to be the case. I think Embiid is going to do what he does. He gets his touches, that is it. I think Jimmy Butler, someone who's shown that he can be successful without having a high usage, he probably takes a little bit of a hit there, but they're running him more at point guard. So I think we'll see a little bit of a bump in Butler's assist numbers here as well. So it is a marginal hit to him. It's a bit of a hit to Ben Simmons. So while I'm mentioning that Tobias Harris's rebounds will drop, I think Simmons's will drop a little bit as well. And I think his assists might drop somewhat and a marginal dip in his usage rate. So there's small hits for Butler, small hit for Simmons, big hit for Harris, and Embiid remains, I think, relatively the same on this team. Now, there's a massive hole opening up here. Babinek was starting at power forward. Mike Muscala was replacing him here, but Tobias Harris moves straight into that spot. But then who is the bench unit on this team? Well, it's going to have to be TJ McConnell. He's going to have to play a lot of minutes because, as I said, the inverse of what happened with the Clippers team, they traded away three forwards and got a guard and two forwards back. The Sixers traded away a guard and two forwards and got three forwards back. So that backcourt, there's a massive hole opening up there where Shamet was coming in and playing 20 minutes a night. Do they look to Zaire Smith, DRC, who's been out all season? Is Markel Fultz back in the fray to take some of these Shamet minutes? Neither of these guys are shooters in any definition of the word shooter. TJ McConnell can't shoot either. So there's a real concern with how this bench depth is going to go. Who takes the minutes that Muscala was playing? Is it Jonah Bolden? I believe it will be. Does Boban get in the mix now as a regular backup center? Maybe. I think that Boban won't play every night. I think that him and Bolden will sort of split those center minutes, and Bolden will take a lot of these backup power forward minutes as well. But then Prison Mike, I think, is going to have to play. He's probably the best shooter in this bench unit, and he is going to have an opportunity to be an every night backup to Tobias Harris, 15 to 16 minutes a night. Bolden, this is how I think it will go. I think we'll see Harris at power forward, Scott at backup power forward, Embiid at center, Bolden at backup center, with the occasional game of Boban chucked in there. I don't think it'll be an every night scenario for Boban, so get your Boban boners under control, because I don't think he's coming in and being a 20 minute a night guy. That's all he needs for value. True, It's not happening here because A, he's not going to share the floor with Embiid, and B, I think that Bolden is probably still, if not ahead of him, at least equivalent, which is going to cut into his value. So who else is going to have that value? Well, Furkan Korkmaz is going to have to step up. He's played at shooting guard and small forward this season. He's shown an ability to at least get shots off from three, which he's going to have to do, and he's going to have to absorb some of those Shamet minutes. And then the other guy who would have stepped into this would have been Shake Milton, but he just broke his hand. So he is now out for the next couple of weeks with broken finger. So he's out now. So his ability to step in that role isn't there. So they're going to be running a bench unit of McConnell, Bolden, Korkmaz, and Scott. I think that's the nine-man rotation. You might say you could throw Boban in there as the 10th guy, but that means you're having Bolden, Scott, and Boban, and one of those guys has got to play at small forward. That's pretty gross. So you're going to have a boost for Korkmaz, a boost for McConnell. You know, TJ had been putting up borderline 12-team league value anyway, and this probably helps him in this regard. So you might consider that if you need assists and steals, and that's it. Your JJ Redick's value stays relatively similar. Maybe he gets a few fewer shots, but some more open looks. But again, how much better can you get than a 40% three-point shooter, which he currently is? So it is a massive risk for Philadelphia, giving up so much for a guy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Two first-round picks, plus this year's first-round pick in Shamet. I wouldn't worry too much about Chandler and Muscala in terms of their value for this team, although it is important, but they got forwards back to replace those guys. That's not too much of a concern. It's their guard depth, which is really, really bad, and I would have to think that the Sixers have got more moves in them. Now, when I tweeted this stuff out, everyone's going, oh yeah, the buyout market. We're going to hit the buyout market. Well, you know who's on the buyout market at the moment? Absolutely nobody. And I hate the buyout market. I absolutely despise the way the NBA runs this. I think it's a disgusting thing to have. But it's a real thing. And last year they got Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova. So there are names that could come in here. Do they look to re-sign Corey Brewer after they let his 10-day contract expire? That's a possibility. Does Wes Matthews get bought out in New York? Maybe, maybe not. He would be a perfect fit to come in here and play that bench role. But nobody who's going to come in that role is going to be a 12-team relevant player. Their starting five is set. They're all playing 31 to 36 minutes a night. Bang. And then you've just got these bench guys picking up the scraps. And at the moment, it's McConnell and Korkmaz taking over all of those wing and guard minutes. And then you've got Bolden, Scott, and Boban taking those minutes. All they need DRC or they need Fultz to really step up to be that third guard or third wing in the mix. But given we've seen nothing from Fultz and literally we've seen nothing from Smith, it's going to be a little bit hard to rely upon those. So the big hit there, of course, is to Tobias Harris with a marginal boost to someone like McConnell, and Bolden gets a little bit more value for deeper formats as well, with Muscala and Chandler both shipping off, and Boban, it's just going to remain the same sort of inconsistency. Now, we can talk about Boban under a different coach, someone will finally unleash him. We're onto the fourth team here, and it's always been the same scenario with Marjanovic. I think the book is written on him that when he's playing, then the numbers are there, but it's just not going to be a consistent thing for Mr. Marjanovic, unfortunately, as much as we all love Boban. But shout out to Bobby and Toby for going together to another team, their third team traded together from the Pistons to the Clippers and now to the Sixers. The best of friends will remain the best of friends. Let's talk about the other trade that did go down here. This is a Kyle McEwen special. Thon McCare goes from the Milwaukee Bucks to the Detroit Pistons in exchange for Stanley Johnson. And paired with the Reggie Bullock trade in Detroit yesterday, this opens up a shit ton of minutes on the wing there. Of course, Thon is a backup center. I would imagine that Thon comes in and takes pretty much all of Zaza Pachulia's minutes, pushes the tackle box, John Lua further down as well. The Pistons have been rumored for Mike Conley. That appears to be dead at this point, but that is still a possibility. But losing Bullock, getting Svi Mykhailiuk, and then losing Stan Johnson, who I thought was in line to maybe take some of those minutes at small forward, it surely has to mean that the Duck Luke Kennard is going to step up and play more minutes. Now, we could have the Shark Bruce Brown step up. We could have Langston Galloway.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
But if the reports are true about the Conley trade being killed because the Pistons didn't want to give up Luke Kennard, I would have to think that Dwayne Casey's getting a tap on the shoulder, like, play this guy now, you dickhead, because this is your only option. I think that's the case, and I think that he would be a solid pickup. Is he a pickup over someone like Gilgeous Alexander? Probably not, but you know that I like what Kennard can do. I don't think he's necessarily going to be blowing the doors off everybody. In every 14-team league, I would add the Duck, no problem. In 12-team leagues, it's a little bit more nuanced. Who are you looking to drop? But I think there is some value here in Kennard losing both Bullock and Johnson to really clear the path. Now, unless Casey decides to go back to Glenn Robinson, who's been a disaster all season, this is opening up a ton for him. McKay, look, I think he can come in and be a 20-minute-a-game guy potentially with these openings. Kyrie Thomas gets a larger role as well. But they're not going to be impacting really anything outside of 20-team leagues. Svi's a guy that hasn't really done all that well this season with his shooting. He struggled there. It's going to take time for him. I'm not sure he's the greatest fantasy contributor in general anyway, and I don't think he's going to be having a significant role this season. I think Kennard is the big winner from both of these Pistons trade. Yeah, a marginal winner from the first one, and that's really been doubled down upon or tripled down upon after this decision from the Pistons to make another deal here, trading away Stanley Johnson. As for Thon, he moves into that backup center role, I would imagine over Zaza, but he still has shown nothing to make us think that he is going to be relevant outside of even the deepest of deep leagues at this stage. And even if he was a top 300 player this season, that would be a marginal surprise at this stage. For the Bucks, we get obviously losing Thon, who is out of the rotation, changes nothing. DJ Wilson is the backup center, and then Ersan Ilyasova, whose minutes have been dipping, he's still playing his role. So it's about fitting Stanley Johnson in there. Well, I think this puts a real nail into Pat Connaughton or Dante DiVincenzo. For deeper leagues, they'll barely play now. And then we get Johnson mixed in with Tone Snell, George Hill, and Sterling Brown. So someone is going to have to miss out there. Is it going to be Snell? Is it going to be Johnson? Is it going to be Brown? Well, so far, Mike Budenholzer has been relying pretty heavily on Sterling Brown, and Sterling Brown reminds me of Stanley Johnson, except that he's good. So I think there's a real risk that Johnson doesn't play the same minutes in Detroit. Not a real risk, almost a guarantee. He doesn't play those same amount of minutes, and they were low anyway. And it's not even a guarantee that he is an every night player. It's going to come down to, I believe, Stanley Johnson or Tony Snell as to who is that last man in the rotation. The 10th guy in the rotation. But even then, or the other thing they could do is maybe they could look to turn Stan into a power forward almost exclusively and take Ilyasova out of the rotation, who has really been struggling of late. But Budenholzer does love Ersan, and it must have been hard for him to reduce his playing time for DJ Wilson. So I think Stan, there's no real pickup here in Milwaukee. Again, Thon wasn't even playing, so it's trying to squeeze someone in. It just means in deeper leagues, someone is going to lose, whether that is Stan, whether that's Sterlo, whether that's Tone Snell. One of those three guys is going to lose some value. It's a worthy punt for both these guys. Both teams were out on their respective players. An opportunity for Thon there behind Drummond, and an opportunity for Stan to develop under a good coach and in a good system could really unlock some stuff. But I'm not all that confident in either of these guys really coming to any sort of fruition here or providing any sort of value for fantasy. So before I actually exit this podcast, I might have just a quick look to see whether Woj has dropped any more bombs at this point. No, we're clear. I'm sure that something is going to happen as soon as I stop recording this, but that is the end of today's show. Tomorrow, again, check out the live trade deadline show across the Locked On Podcast Network. Myself and David Locke hosting that, and all hosts across the network are going to be chiming in as the day goes on. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.